Eso. Tala, bana ya utawa. Tala, soja. Pulule, 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 pulule.
The heart of Ottawa, Canada. That's the Soul Jazz Orchestra with Secousse Soukousse. It's from their 2006 album, Freedom No Go Die, blending elements of soukousse, salsa, afrobeat, funk, and free jazz, and doing a lot of progressive music for many years now. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and guess what? It's Free Your Mind Friday. And boy, I imagine there's a lot that you need to free your mind of today. Well, just to give you a couple of hints as to what's going on today, today is supposed to be the day that the Republicans come up with something approximating a plan to get on with the debate of Trump care. They didn't make their deadline and got a brisk talking to by Donald Trump yesterday. And he said to them, if you can't get your votes in gear, your votes in line, so we can dismantle Obamacare, I'm done and I'll be moving on with something else. That something else is supposed to be the tax question, the tax codes. London is still trying to overcome its grief with the killing of four people, the wounding of as many as 50 from 12 different countries. This happened, as you may know, on Wednesday, a terror attack. And the city is jolted, but appears to be coping as best they can. We have a very disturbing report today that the District of Columbia logged 501 cases of missing juveniles, many of them Black and Latino, in the first 3 months of this year. And members of the Congressional Black Caucus are asking for a special FBI inquiry into this many missing girls in Washington, D.C. And those are some of the big things that are happening today, but you are the people who are guiding the show. It's your show. So let's get on with that at 888-874-4888. What's on your mind, either about the events of this week or anything else you think is worth our consideration? 888-874-4888. E from Edgewater you get us started today.
Hello, Yutris.
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing very well, and I hope that you're doing better.
Yeah, I'm hanging in. Thank you.
Okay. But all we can do in this climate that we find ourselves in here, I guess. I just wanted to talk about, you know, we had Occupy Wall Street, and they turned the tables on us, and now they're occupying our minds with all this nonsense that they're feeding us, and we keep listening to and believing. And yesterday I had Charles Ortel on.
Yes.
Discussing more of the Clintons' shenanigans that's been going on for the last 30 years at least, from when they were in Arkansas, in fact, probably before that when they were in Yale together where they met. And we always seem to wonder, like, how can they get away with all this nonsense that they've been doing, all this illegal stuff? And I keep asking myself that. And all I can come up with is that they're like... they're like the top of the iceberg, you know, that we see it. So we know it is an iceberg there. We got to go around it. We got to stay. But the real culprit is underneath the surface. And we got to go beneath the surface to uncover what's really going on here in this corrupt world that we find ourselves all of a sudden in. I think like back in the 80s when everybody was doing the hustle to Donna Summer and the village people, and cocaine was flowing. I drove a cab, so I saw the world was crazy. Studio 54, every ride. Anyway, so they're working for the system that's hidden under the surface, and the system protects them, and that's why they don't get in trouble for all of the stuff that they're doing for the system. You asked Charles Ortel yesterday, where's all the money go? The money goes back to the system, because the system makes it possible for the Clintons to get hundreds of thousands of dollars to make talks, because all they get is 10% of that. Whatever they generate, if they can generate $10 billion, they get a billion. That's a lot of money, right?
Well, yeah, but according to Charles, when you add up all of the inurements that have come through these deals that have been made through the Clinton Foundation, we are in the world of trillions, that's with a T, trillions of dollars.
Right.
And I could tell you there's, you know, a bleak sign of hope, at least, in that several governments around the world are beginning to demand answers. They're not out of the woods at all. People have begun to ask questions. Some even are demanding their money back. But many governments have begun now to take formal action in trying to recoup the money and to demand accountability for the money they had dispensed to the foundation for many years.
Right.
The only thing is that, of course, in the United States, we don't see any action at all. In the United States, it's as if these problems do not exist. Going to Arkansas or Massachusetts or New York State, or Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C., you have all the attorneys general of the United States, any of them or all of them can initiate action. And no one has yet done so. So we will see that perhaps the pressure is going to come from the outside of the U.S. borders, and it will probably create some kind of momentum in the U.S. authorities taking a closer look. But this is the biggest scandal in a long, long time. Charles thinks, and he says, and he has reason to, this is a guy who brought down GE and AIG and other companies for overinflating the value of their stocks during the collapse of Wall Street. He was the guy who did it. And he is absolutely certain that this is the largest unprosecuted fraud in history. And there is a whole battalion across the world now, because we are in constant contact with each other, and they sent me their correspondence. And we could see where they are moving aggressively. Investigative journalists and others are really probing the Clintons now. Well, you got us started today,
yes,
and thank you so much.
Can I still say one more thing?
Sure.
Hello? Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know, back a while back, there was a missing $7 trillion was missing. And there was an investigation going on at the Pentagon. In a couple of offices, they had evidence, and the men that were working in there were uncovering what happened to that $7 trillion. And then while that was going on, that investigation, 9/11 took place, and one of the planes supposedly crashed into the Pentagon. But all the there was no evidence of a plane crash, except an old fuselage was somewhere in the area that didn't even belong to the plane that supposedly had crashed into it. But curiously, the only damage that was done to the Pentagon was was the offices that were doing the investigation about the $7 trillion missing dollars. And all those men that were doing the investigation died from some explosion that they claimed to be done by the terrorists. Right? So that's how they squashed that whole thing. So they always find a way to cover themselves. And, you know, Hillary, after they got kicked out of the White House because of Slick Willie's wiener, then she gets made senator. And who was going to run against her as senator? Do you know who that was?
Who was going to run against her as senator?
Run against her for senator of New York State. Who was about to throw his hat in the ring?
Oh, I don't know.
John F. Kennedy Jr.
Well, there are a couple of names that have been floating around. But, of course, nothing is you're talking about John F. Kennedy Jr. who died in this mysterious plane crash.
Right. Curiously, just as he's ready to throw his hat in the ring to run for senator, which he definitely would have beaten Hillary out, he suddenly dies with his wife and her cousin in the plane. It was only a 20-minute flight from New Jersey to Martha's Vineyard, and before they could get there, the plane crashed into the ocean. So he's out of the picture. He's out of the way. This way, they get rid of him before he becomes a problem. And then Hillary runs against
the,
who?
The one
who
thing is, these things are all conjecture at one level. We don't have any proof of any of this. These are some of the thoughts that have been circulating, but without conclusive proof. But it's interesting to listen to, because sometimes out of these so-called conspiracy theories, there is some truth. Thanks for getting us started today. Dwight from Newark, you're on the air. Hello, Dwight.
I hope you're doing well today.
Yes, I'm trying to do well today. I think I'm doing well today. How are you?
Absolutely fantastic. I'm well myself.
Yatrice,
what I want to talk about is your Wednesday show. And we were talking about how the Democratic Party is leaderless. And I think that the metaphor of a punch-drunk boxer would be appropriate for the Democratic Party. Now, the reason that I say that is because after Hillary Clinton's colossal defeat, instead of critiquing or doing a in-depth investigation on what the Democratic Party did wrong, they're so concentrated on this Russian involvement. Now, they try to fool us by saying that they're going to modernize the Democratic Party. They're going to make it more progressive. Now, what we saw was that President Obama directly intervened with Keith Ellison possibly being the chair of the Democratic Party, and through his support behind Tom Perez. Now, what we see in that is Tom Perez then naming Keith Ellison as co-chair. Now, I think that within both parties, the Democratic Party as well as the Republican Party, that we're seeing a all-out war with the establishment of both parties fighting what they try to perceive themselves as liberals or progressives in the Democratic Party. Now, from what I've seen, the word progressive or liberal has moved so far right that these people, the Progressive Party or the liberals, are almost non-existent. So now what they did was the Democratic Party, that is, they tried to use Bernie Sanders as almost, I mean, he took a position as almost a recruiter for the Democratic Party.
He is a recruiter. He said
exactly,
that.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm saying that, just last week, there was the mention of possible impeachment, first of all, by Dianne Feinstein, and then she was followed up a couple of days later by Maxine Waters, which you also brought up on Wednesday's show, tweeting the word impeachment. Now, I don't see where any of the fights that the American people have, I don't see the Democratic Party or what little leadership there is trying to take on any of that fight. As you pointed out before, the Women's Party, I don't see the Democrats being behind that, putting that together, mobilizing everybody. This is the people. But as far as the Democratic Party, it seems like I think that a good example is that the Democratic Party is fighting with knives and the Republican Party is fighting with mortars and, much more powerful equipment. Because look at what happened in North Carolina. Now, the Republican governor was defeated, but the Democratic governor was elected. But what can he do? You know, it's like the constant method of the Republican Party is to obstruct governance.
Well, my thing is, I mean, you did a good job of outlining your argument here, but I have to ask you, with all the things that you've just noted, what is the consequence for the people? I mean, what advantage has either party been to the people?
Absolutely none. They have been a deterrent to the people. They haven't been an asset or a benefit to the people at all. As far as the Republican Party, as I stated earlier, they should be obstructionists with everything that Donald Trump is trying to do. They have had no ammunition to stop any appointment that he has had. Now, the person who owned the restaurant chain that was going to be his prospective labor secretary, I don't give the Democrats any kudos or any authority or job well done for having denied him. I mean, it was basically his background and the things that he had done in his past that basically spoke for themselves.
So and the mobilization of people who used him successfully to illustrate the point that they're demanding a $15 minimum wage.
Absolutely. So, I mean, I don't see where the Republicans now, it was laughable where just before, I mean, not the topic, but you brought up the Congressional Black Caucus is demanding an independent investigation into the missing black and brown children from Washington, D.C. I don't expect the Congressional Black Caucus to be able to do anything. Ever since that they were so sternly chided back in 2010 by Obama with the stop complaining, pull your bedroom slippers off and put your marching boots on, they have been utterly neutered. So I don't see where they have the ability or the power to do anything.
They have been shamed into action because, you know, this was a pivotal group that was singled out for silencing. And they could have been to great effect. They could have been agitators for change, but they chose not to for a long, long time.
Absolutely.
The Democratic Party just figured, well, we just capture them, we capture other black groups, we capture the black pastors and ministers, and we good. So, and they said, all right, they went along with the program and refused to really take on the advocate role on behalf of the black community all across the country. So my suspicion is that this call for an FBI investigation into the missing children in Washington, D.C. came about because, A, some other group is about to do it in an explosive way, and so they headed them off at the pass with that. And secondly, it was a way of them becoming relevant again in the eyes of voters and the public. And I'm not discounting the fact that they are genuinely concerned, but I'm saying that my suspicion is, if I know the way these things work, this is about to be made a major story.
And I agree.
They decided that they better get in on it. And this is how politics works. So good to hear from you today, and thank you for contributing.
Thank you, Teresa, and have a wonderful day.
You too. Thank you. Maat from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, Hotep, and greetings to the beloved family.
Thank you.
Teresa, I really appreciate it on Wednesday. You're taking a step back, and sometimes it's just so soothing to hear you riff on a particular subject, because the day before it was we're in the midst of chaos, and I remember myself contributing on Tuesday, very sleep deprived and not really making any points that I really was trying to make. But I wanted, you know, I heard for the first time yesterday about the story of our black youth, and it sounds like it's in particular sisters that are disappearing. And I didn't hear anything in the range of 501. So at some point, I hope you will share some of the information that you have on it. I guess I have to get on the internet to track the information down, because I'm a news hound and read between the lines more recently because of Trump with the mainstream media, but haven't had a peep on that. And so that tells us a lot. It made me also think about the Atlanta murders of young black men that they wound up pinning on Wayne Williams, I think his name. So that's quite a story, and maybe you can even find someone who has been investigating and can give us some of the skinny. But I want to point out, because on Tuesday, one of the points that I was trying to make, I think it's important that we also understand what has happened in Russia, because I used to have to get under my classroom desk during the Cold War, which is all these wars, cold or otherwise, are very, very much contrived, and that has come out. So I'm one of the original peaceniks. But I think it's also important, to understand that shortly after Putin came to power, and that was interesting how he protected Yeltsin, who was a chaotic drunk, and he came to power, and he set up what is... And I think David K. Johnston is someone who brings out some good information on his site, dcreport.org. And he was the one who followed Trump for about 30 years and did a book, which I'm getting soon, called The Making of Donald Trump. But he explains about how the oligarchy works in terms of these a certain number of billionaires, and is being a criminal network that's basically run by Putin. A couple years ago, everybody who opposes him either winds up dead, including journalists, and or in prison on trumped up charges. So I think it's important that it doesn't come out that we're trying to not be peaceful with Russia, but there's a certain way under Putin, and he's made himself an autocrat. He's been in power for 17 years. He's been able to manipulate the system, and he's going to have another term until, I guess, you know, he'll be on his deathbed. So I mainly wanted to, because I haven't heard our family mention about how that criminal network. I remember following the case of Lichnet. I can't say his Russian name right now, but he had such a strange poisoning with plutonium.
Only
certain, you know, it's not something that you could go down to your chemical supplier, local drugstore. So let's be aware. And my last point is that in February, and this was brought out by Rachel Maddow, when she goes into 9/11 truthers, I can't relate, but she has brought out some important points in terms of connections, like the Bank of Cyprus is a Russian money laundering bank. That came out a few years ago. And the one who Trump assigned for the Secretary of Commerce, Wilbur Ross, he until he got that position, was the co-chairman and with the Deutsche Bank CEO after they had to pay. You know, these guys never go to jail after Deutsche Bank had to pay $900 million, which is a slap on the wrist for all their illegal activities and money laundering. And the other point is the New Yorker has had a couple months ago, one was called Active Measures. It's worth getting on the internet and reading. It starts out a little slow, but it picks up in terms of the Russian cyber tooling, if you will. And then the more recent piece was called the worst real estate deal of Donald Trump of his activities in Azerbaijan, which is you know, a totally corrupt type of estate and dealing with Virg. So there is something there.
But here's what I want us to begin to look at. This is not new. I mean, the faces change and the names change and so forth. But the objective relationship between power and the people hasn't changed at all, except in that it has become more treacherous. It has become more onerous, more oppressive, and we are having more and more of a difficult time just simply trying to make it, just trying to do, you know, get on with our lives. It's become so predatory and so universally predatory. Wherever you go today, you are likely in the midst of a corrupt environment. And this is, I mean, people are reacting. People are freaking out because it creates a stress. The relationship between the oligarchy or some other form of government, I mean, it's so lopsided. The state actually is at war around the globe, is at war with its people. And at some point, we have to just kind of say, okay, we have enough clues that we're in trouble. We have to organize some way out of it to keep some kind of sanity. This is where I would hope we get to, constantly discussing ways in which we can survive the predicament we're in, because it's no longer just in the United States or just in, I mean, it's everywhere. There's a version of this madness, and the people are suffering. So we have to get to that point of raising these questions. These people that you pointed out are behaving in the same historical pattern as their predecessors. Same kind of attitude. I'm taking it all. It's all for me. None for you, all for me. And they're prepared to kill you for it. What are we going to do? That's the question. Thanks for calling in today.
Thank you.
All right. From Tokyo, Yasu, you're on the air.
Hey, Therese.
Hi, how are you?
I'm quite fantastic. I share your sentiment in general, but, you know, I've always been hated for defending Trump, even though I don't support Trump, if you know how it is. It's kind of like trying to defend against these unfounded allegations like Russia, this and that, while you have Donald Trump himself with his crazy ideas or his people around him who actually have things that we should assault and attack and destroy because they are not helpful for Americans or me, like in Japan. It's kind of disturbing to watch the drama going down in the United States, where things that seem so irrelevant to, like a nuclear detonation in North Korea or whatever they would shoot at South Korea or Japan or China, it would be a complete game changer in the history of the modern world. But right now, what's most important is whether Russian hacked or Gorsuch is this and that. It's just, from the outside of the United States, it's just so surreal.
I could imagine. But then again, in your neck of the woods, you have some crazy things happening too that people just cannot come to grips with. You take what just happened in South Korea. You take the increasing tensions between Duterte and China. You have all these things, the trade wars that are going on. You have the U.S. detente with China as well, and with Japan, whose prime minister was just here in the United States visiting with Trump, even against protests. What is the attitude? What are people feeling about? I mean, there was a sense that whatever was happening, that the people could count on some semblance of order. This is an area of the world where order in life and government are highly treasured. Do you get a sense that people are feeling that their systems of government are getting more and more out of order?
So let me tell you, my dear wife is Chinese, grew up there. I am Japanese, grew up here. Our parents are not exactly on terms on history, and myself as well. I'm considered ultra-right-wing, and she taunts me all the time. But the interesting thing is that people are understanding that politics is a great drama, and people have life to go on, and we hope and we are trying to influence our own governments not to nuke each other. And when it comes to, for example, the situation in Korea, you know, nobody takes seriously that we're going to have a major war. It's a kabuki act, the next economic thing. It's a very different situation. Like when we see news from the West, it's always framed in terms of race. But over here, we never hear anything about it. It's about this person and that person of this country and that country. And this is going on and that's going on. And Japan did bad things, and Japan says, no, we didn't do that. China says, oh, you guys are evil, and that's why we're expanding, and you don't have any standing to challenge us, criticize us because of the past, and so on and so forth. It's kind of a weird situation, but in the end, it's kind of a different dynamic that you have in the United States. And if I may comment on Donald Trump, from Japan's perspective, I think he originally was a fantastic champion, that no war with Russia and be tough in Asia, but we're not going to be interventionist. But like with Tillerson and what he says, now it sounds like the United States is actually going to be even worse than George W. Bush. And now, well, the entire globe is under chaos.
Yeah. That's the feeling. Overwhelmingly, people are more and more believing that chaos is winning and we all are losing.
Yes. So
that's the problem. How do we get to a point where some stability ought to exist, because people are literally going out of their minds about the, you know, things being so iffy. You don't know what's about to happen. And whatever happens is not going to be a small thing. It's going to be a large issue that will affect hundreds of millions of people. So people are becoming more and more concerned about the conduct of nations and the conduct of heads of nations and governments of nations. Thanks, Yasir, for calling in today.
Hey, just one last minor point. You know,
sure.
I last heard Henry of New Jersey, was it?
Chicago.
Organizing locally. Yeah, Japan is not known for demonstrations or any big actions, but kind of like, I don't know, maybe the sentiment. But our government, well, it's, you know, you say that, people say that Japan's been a democracy, but it's been a dictatorship for about 60 years. Same people, corruption, CIA money. If you follow the history, it's all there.
We have a lot more in common than we know, right?
Yes, indeed.
We certainly do.
The Japanese people, just like a lot of, and you know, the strange thing is many black people in Japan who adopted the culture are kind of like the superstars in mass media. But anyways, Japanese is a religion, but and that's another story. But what I wanted to say is Japan is not happy with the United States any longer, regardless of Donald Trump. And I think we're going to work towards there's a war criminal called Hirota Kouki, who wasn't a war criminal, but he considered that an alliance between Russia, China, and Japan will be the ultimate alliance to bring stability And I think, wittingly or not, we shall head there. And in Japan, we don't have too many people, like, doing demonstrations, but there are, underneath it, political movements actually take charge of our damned, corrupt government. And we view the United States as a kind of a lost cause because it's just...
We're a lost cause. Oh, my gosh.
We just have to do it on our own. And there's so many people out here who view the government who are kind of like a symbiotic relationship with the United States, and we just absolutely hate them. I think in a decade or two, it's going to be a different country here. And
Well, thank you.
United States, I don't know. You have Donald Trump. Good luck, I would say. But yeah, I have a lot of ideas on how to improve things. Japan already has the groundwork.
But you know what? What I can do, because we're running a little low on time, and I wanted to get a couple of others in. But
oh, I'm sorry.
No. Please call us again. And, you know, you can go through chapter 2 the next time we talk. You're talking about your ideas. So
I
look forward to hearing from you again. And thanks for calling in today and contributing so meaningfully. Thank you. Let's talk to Eric from Albany.
Hello, Eutrice.
Hello.
A couple of weeks ago, you were talking about feeling strange for going back a generation for your
music. Oh, you know what? You need to talk directly into the phone because we're getting a lot of echo.
I'm sorry. A couple of weeks ago, you were talking about feeling strange for going back a generation for your musical interests. And I go back to my grandfather's generation myself. I'm into ragtime before The Sting came out, so you know that's how my life is. But my commentary today is a song parody. It's which I wrote to the tune of The Dance of the Grizzly Bear, which was written in 1910 by George Botsford and Irving Berlin. So down in Foggy Bottom, where the pages schlep, they've got a dance with pep they call the Grizzly Step. Learn it from the Russian hacker, so exceptional, there's no refuting. Even Bush's Pooty Putin, never mind, the evidence is mighty thin. We'll propagate the spin and let it sink right in. Oh, what a piece of cake, just like, oh, what a, anything else is fake. Oh, what a piece of cake, it's just like a scheme you have to make. Put the blame on the Russians. Subterfuge is all the fashion. Give your hype a little passion. Put the blame on the Russians. Pizzagate is purely rubbish. Give them something panda cubbish. Put the blame on the Russians. Serve them up on a crap. Hillary's a victim of that wicked WikiLeaks. Doing the grizzly step. And there you have it.
Da 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 da.
Hey. Yes.
Okay. Well, thank you. A musical commentary.
Pleasure.
Thanks for that. It brings a little bit of joy in the day. Thank you for calling in. Well, Henry from Chicago, your name was mentioned by someone from Japan. So somebody is listening to you. You're on the air.
Hey, Teresa, how you doing?
Okay.
All right. Want to say hi to everybody in the PRN listening audience and all the callers as well.
Thank you.
Actually honored to have somebody mention me from Japan. And
why he mentioned you, talking about bringing attention to the idea of working locally.
Yes, and this is the reason for my call. I wanted to give you an update.
Okay, good.
I know last week there was a little misunderstanding about what we're doing, so... just to briefly give a synopsis, 2 weeks ago, a video went out about a young black girl in North Carolina was choked by a Korean owner in a beauty supply, and the video went viral. And generally, many people in that community basically were outraged by it because she was accused of stealing lashes. Now, we all know that whether you steal lashes or steal a laptop, you have no right to be choked out by the owner of the store. So what we found out was this owner, and we don't know if the Korean in the video is the owner of that shop, but we understand that there are multiple franchises across the country, one here in Chicago. So we decided we wanted to join the boycott protest shutdown of this store. So last Saturday, we went out there, and there were multiple organizations out there generally, you know, encouraging the customers that's coming into the store not to shop there, but also too what we had was flyers of black-owned beauty shops that were near the neighborhood and around the city that they can go to, and there were about 12 of them. So when we were distributing these flyers as these people were going, I would probably venture to say 8 out of 10 of them did not go into the store. So we basically disrupted their business that way. Now, I want to also mention this. The police did come. They said that we did have a right, but as long as we're not blocking the entrance, we were allowed to be there. No one was arrested. No fights broke out. No one was hurt. So there was no mob action. We've had people out there every day since then to constantly put pressure on these owners. Now, from a meeting that I had yesterday, from my understanding, it seems like the owners are trying to reach out to us in regards to a sit-down. Not sure when it's going to take place, not sure what they want to talk about. We also were kind of discussing on, once they do reach out to us, what do we want? So we're actually contemplating different options on, what we want this shop owner to do, we are displaying our power here in regards to, making sure that, we hurt their business, and now they realize this and now they want to reach out to us. So we have to discuss on what our options. Do we want them to close? Do we want them to contribute to, some programs within our community? So that's something that we're going to be discussing hopefully within the next week or so. But we are still continuing the boycott. Tomorrow we're going to have a bunch of groups out there also to distributing literature on different black-owned businesses that they can purchase from. So that right there is going on. It's giving traction. So we've got the attention, and we just have to strategically know what we want to do next. And I want to quickly say this too. Yesterday, Jason Van Dyke's court hearing, the officer who shot Laquan McDonald 16 times and murdered him back in 2014. We attended his court hearing. He is being charged with 16 additional counts of manslaughter, and also to the his attorney who filed a motion to drop it was not they're going to continue the case, so I guess the motion was denied or whatever, but they're going to be continuing the case. So his next court hearing is April 20th. But I want to say this because, it's so interesting. They're trying to keep this, as a hush-hush because, first of all, they gave us the wrong courtroom. And what was so interesting is we had to ask a young black female security guard within the courthouse where his case was, and you know, she told us, and while we were there. Now, they have kiosks there where they have the names of the court, you know, court cases that were going on today and the room numbers. How about his name wasn't even on there? But it was, actually, you know what? It was on there, but it was on there as John Doe. So they were already, you know, kind of like misguiding us. But the one thing I want to say about that was I was a little disappointed because even though there were some significant people in that courtroom, the way that came out 2 years ago, that courtroom should have been packed. I mean, standing room only type of courtroom. That's what I was looking for, and I did not see that. So I was a little disappointed with that in that measure. So I guess that's it in regards to my report.
But you exhibited, you and others exhibited leadership. And this is really, it's like an answered prayer. Because that is routine. We had so many cases where major crimes are being committed in the courtroom by the prosecutor, by the witnesses, by the judge. A lot of these cases, people end up getting railroaded because the prosecutor, the judge, and even witnesses are all working together. And nobody is there to observe anything. So the minute we see, regularly people showing up and observing cases, it helps a great deal to get people a fair trial. People may not realize that, but it really does help. So that's great. I'm so happy to hear of your progress on your boycott movement. And by the way, how does that make you feel, you and the others who started this? Have you discussed and determined in any way? Have you discerned a sense of a pride?
I mean, yes, we have, but this is, I mean, me, myself, I feel this is progress. Now, progress doesn't necessarily mean success. And, you know, I feel that we still have a lot of work to do because, you know, obviously we have to get our people in the mode of, you know, our community is under attack and we need to realize this. I don't think people are conscious of this. And it's a shame because it's like the signs are there. I don't know why people, you know, just don't read the tea leaves that, you know, our community is under attack, and we need to do something about this. Yeah. And we need to make sure that the people that are, you know, exploiting our community, you know, raping our community, disrespecting our community, they need to be held accountable.
Well, the thing is that you and others got together because you recognized it, and you're doing something about it. And I like that recognition that the fact that you're doing doesn't mean that you're going to succeed, but it depends on how you define success. If you were able to wake up or help wake up five people, you've already achieved success. Not only to wake them up, but to get them involved in doing something that will benefit the community. That's already success.
Yeah. Well, my determination of success, Beatrice, is what we talked about last week about that defense system. That's my definition of success. Maybe somebody might look at it differently, but I believe that defense system of I'm able to make a call and I'm able to rally thousands of people to, you know, a situation where that we need to, you know, pay attention to.
Well, congratulations and, best wishes for you to stay the course, and for others also to stay the course together and make a point about the fact that the community is worth defending. And you're not going to allow this kind of conduct in the neighborhood. And this is a way of getting that message out and getting a change occurring. Thank you so much. And again, congratulations. Take care. We have just a short, well, actually, no, we're kind of out of time. It goes by so fast. And that's because people have so many important things to share. And this is why I love this program of Free Your Mind Friday. And generally, I try to make as much room as possible in all the programs that we do to make sure that we have input from the audience. And this is the great thing about this station, PRN.FM. Tell your friends about it. Share the word. And, of course, put in a plug for your favorite program, Lead Stories. I want to begin to encourage us all, one way or the other, to just not be overwhelmed. There's a lot that's going on, and a lot of it is designed to overwhelm us, to make us feel that there is no reason, there's no point in resisting, because they have so overwhelmed us. They have military power, they have bureaucratic power, they have all kinds of power, and they are certain to prevail. Do not get despondent, do not lose courage, and do not yield to this, to their demand that we surrender, because they so overwhelm us. Just observe what's going on and use that information to inform the construction of your survival plan. And then you would see, as we just heard from Henry, you'd be surprised other people are thinking the same thing. And that's how a movement starts, people identifying what they have in common. Thanks for listening today and contributing, all those who had an opportunity to do so. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Alternative Visions with Dr. Jack Rasmus. It's always a great program to listen to, so keep it right here. You can reach me at Lead Stories, L-E-I-D, stories, at gmail.com. It's the weekend. Keep calm. Surround yourself with people who bring positive dimension to your life, and run like hell away from all others. A pleasure always, and a great privilege to be in your company. We see each other Monday. Bye-bye.